Hey, this is Ryan Dawson of the ANC Report talking to Andrew Illingworth, also of ANC Report. We're going to go over some current events in the Middle East, the Iraqi take-back of Kurdish territory within Iraq, also Trump being gaffe to Israel, pulling out of UNESCO, decertifying the Iran deal. What does all this mean? Andrew, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, I should say.
Thank you, Ry. How you doing?
I'm doing great because of the latest news in Iraq.
Oh yeah, it's good news.
I haven't been this happy since the Syrians retook Aleppo in December.
Oh, it's the victory, the importance of it, everything. It's pretty much Iraq's Aleppo in many respects.
Isn't that embarrassing for the fake news media? Because when Syria was retaking Aleppo, they did this series of, oh, it's the last fill in the blank of Aleppo.
Yeah,
oh,
the last poppy shelter,
the last clown. And what happens instead when they're saying, oh, this monster Assad dictatorship regime is coming and everyone's going to die, and instead they liberate Aleppo and they have public Christmas parties, the giant Christmas trees out in the street, getting killed, food returns.
10 months into the city's liberation, trade and the economy of the city has skyrocketed. Markets are open again. Fruit is back into the market. Certain factories and mills are running again, and it's starting to return to what it was before the war, which is the industrial center of Syria. So it's getting there.
But there's no explanation of that. Not only did they not mention that, the mass media that put all this hype up, I mean, they were even saying Aleppo is another Holocaust. Some of them.
Hashtag Aleppo Holocaust. I must have seen that about a million times.
Exactly. They did this big doomsday report.
Yeah.
Aleppo falls or is liberated in reality. And none of the things they said were going to happen. All the opposite happened. And instead of addressing that, they just move along like, oh, well, next topic, let's talk about gassings or something. So anyway, we saw that happen in Syria. The same thing is going to happen here in Iraq. They're not going to address any of the improvements that are going to occur. But before we talk about Iraq retaking Kurdish territory, let's get into some news that happened a little earlier this week with President Trump. I'm sure you saw what his moves about talking about moving the capital to Jerusalem, pulling out of UNESCO, and of course decertifying the Iran deal.
Yes, and a lot of people believe that this is, at face value, he appears to be completely submitting to Israel. I mean, at face value, he does, but maybe that's all it is just face value stuff. I've sort of, private conversations with you, I've come to agree that I think it's nothing more than face value action just to make Israel happy, but it doesn't really change anything, and he probably even knows that.
Well, it certainly doesn't really increase all the ankle grabbing for Israel that already existed with Trump, with Obama, with George Bush. I mean, if you just set the standard of, well, we're already giving them $10 to $11 million a day, and we're already at war in the Middle East because a bunch of neocon Jews lied and dragged us into war. If you start with that low standard, then, yeah, it's not much of an increase. It's a lot of toothless placating to Israel, a bunch of non-action actions. Like UNESCO, for example, sure, the U.S. pull it out of UNESCO. And in an abstract way, that's a kind of clickbait gotcha title. Oh, look at that. And they're doing it for Israeli interest. To me, that's actually a good thing, because it puts the spotlight on how much the Israelis have a grip over the U.S. presidency. But really, the U.S. has already pulled out of UNESCO in every meaningful way back in 2011.
Under Obama, again, let's clarify, for those who
don't remember who was in power at that time. Under Barack Obama, who Netanyahu actually hated, no matter what Obama did. So under Obama, he's just doing the same thing as Trump and the same thing as a Republican, Democrat, it wouldn't have mattered. They all would have behaved the same way.
Yeah.
When UNESCO allowed Palestine full membership, they're acknowledging their existence.
Yes.
And just like the one China policy with Taiwan, we're not allowed to say something exists that we all know exists.
Yeah.
So the U.S. used to pay for 22% of UNESCO's budget, and that's for, you know, preserving World Heritage sites. Things not so bad, you know, things that we probably ought to do, although I can think of a better way. But 22% gone, so all that money was yanked over. Israel getting upset that UNESCO allowed Palestine in, and good on the UN. They kept Palestine's membership, and they financed what the U.S. withdrew from. So we've already not been giving them any money since 2011. So formally walking away doesn't really do much other than say, man, we're never going to come back and give you money.
Yeah, well, clearly the UN is no longer afraid of Netanyahu staring at them for 30 seconds straight and saying nothing, like he pulled that wonderful stunt about a year back.
Oh, and do you remember when he... That's because he forgot what he was saying. He said, I'll just glare at him. Anti-Semite. 6 million. Yeah. That trick doesn't work anymore. But Netanyahu's jackass that got in there and said, Iraq, Iran, Syria are destabilized. He said it would be a good thing if we destabilized Iraq, that all good things would come from it. I can guarantee it, he said. And, of course, the opposite was true. It was good things for Israel. Israel's been getting 77% of its oil, three-fourths of its oil from the Kurdish
region. That's correct. According to the Financial Times in 2015, and I believe until very, very recently, it hasn't changed much. About three-quarters
last year was the same way, of Israel's oil.
About three-quarters of Israel's oil comes from Iraqi Kurdistan. I should say Kurdish-occupied Iraq.
And most of the rest is the PTC line from Azerbaijan. And I've made maps and explained that before. I mean, what are they going to do now?
Oh, well, we'll get to that soon enough.
We will. What, so UNESCO was sort of a toothless gesture. He brings Kissinger in formally. Kissinger's always been there anyway. So again, this is just not really changing anything. They're just more like admitting it, you know, yanking the cover off and being like, yeah, this is what we've been doing anyway. And you know what? Henry Kissinger, as horrible of a monster he is actually more moderate than the modern monsters we've had. You know, the Kagans and Crystals and Newmans and so on. Kissinger is evil, but he's not retarded.
No, he's certainly. Actually, I remember watching the news a few days ago, and I saw a shot of him with Trump, as in he was sitting in the Oval Office, or I think it was the Oval Office, or somewhere with Trump. And I couldn't even identify him at first. I thought, who is that Jabba the Hutt sitting next to Trump? And I looked a little closer, and I realized that they'd pulled Kissinger out of deep storage and, you know, sort of dusted the cobwebs off him and everything and positioned him next to Trump, and he was giving some kind of advice.
But Trump's a Nazi surrounded by Zionist Jews.
That's right.
Jews,
so that's right. Nazi.
His grandchildren are Jewish, but he's a Nazi.
Yeah, that's CNN logic right there.
I mean, it really, the Zionist policies worse than the Nazis, because at least the Nazis were opposed. The Zionist policy of ethnic cleansing and fleecing of money, I mean, they just can't get enough of it.
Well, the Nazis were honest about what they did, weren't they? The Zionists disguise it as all these nice things, but it's going to benefit humanity and the world, and they disguise it.
Well, not if you talk to a settler. They don't hide it.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. You go speak to the settlers, that's right, as our friend Robert in Lakesh has done.
Robert's been over there. Robert's been red-pilled for a long time. Abby Martin has finally seen the light on Israel because she went there. And good on her, because I used to get on her case about it. She still isn't 100%, you know, all the way understanding why and how much the power of the lobby has or anything. But she's definitely come around on Palestine, and she's been doing some great interviews over there, talking to settlers and just letting the racism come out. You talk to these average Israelis, and they're just like, "We need to kill all the Arabs." Yeah.
These Europeans, I mean, that's all I see when
Let's talk about Robbie's video real fast, since you brought up Robert and Lakesh. I'm sure you saw the one where he's asking the soldiers why they're pointing guns at children.
I saw a bunch of heads that looked like they were from France, from Germany, from Poland.
There was a ginger in there. It's just, it's European colonialism with a different religious theme. But yes. In their own minds, they're Jewish.
That's as far as it goes. Just like in the Germans' minds, they were Aryans, or at least in the Nazis' minds, they were Aryans, you know, and they created this whole mythical racial concept around it. And they put that concept, they tried to apply it to practicality, and anyway, look what they turned out to be in the end.
Yeah, I think a lot of them had different motives, though. I think a lot of World War II became racial after the 1960s and the Civil Rights Movement. I think a lot of World War II was because of World War I, because they legitimately had annexed German territory.
Of course.
And taken it. I mean, I'm supporting a war. I'm just saying
The common soldier to pick up the gun. The powers on the outside gave the pretext, and they gave the unifying rationale that the Nazis needed to be able to do other things eventually.
Right. Well, there's all these different reasons, but the one we need to focus on is, yeah, but they were racist, which is true and terrible. But yeah. We don't want to bring up the other motivations, because then we have to question our own actions, the Allies, when I say we, and how it may have exacerbated the situation and made things worse.
Yeah.
And a lot of the crimes that they're guilty of, the Allies are also guilty of. They killed civilians. They
Bombing the hell out of Germany and dropping two nuclear weapons on Japan.
Yeah, that's...
that's one of them.
Unforgivable. So you got to find something more horrible to point to continue the good guy versus bad guy narrative and justify all the wars afterward by saying, oh, you're a Chamberlain or so on and so on.
Yeah.
Anyway, getting off track of World War II, but I brought it up. It's my fault. But yeah, you got a bunch of Europeans pointing guns at natives.
That's right.
Children. And yesterday in Lakesh was rejected from entering a mosque because they decided he can't be Muslim since he's white.
Oh, wow. So now religion and race are interchangeable realities.
They questioned him on it, and of course he answered because he is Muslim, so he needed answers.
They need to look at him and see that he's got a Salafi beard.
He does have a beard, but he's whiter than Casper's ass.
Yeah, so what? So are the Chechens, some of them.
That's true.
Yeah.
But the Israelis decided that, you know, Muslim and Arab are synonymous.
And just to put it into perspective a little further, there was a very famous ISIS fighter who died in Raqqa recently. He blew himself up in a car bomb. He was Swedish. And, you could argue ISIS isn't Muslim. Of course, you could argue that. But...
They draw from losers all around the world.
Even the fanatics accepted him, and he was blonde-haired and everything. Anyway, and this guy, he blew himself up. But the fact that the Israelis stopped, are you saying it was the Israelis that stopped him?
Yeah, the Israeli guards would not allow him. First, they were stopping everyone when there was a Jewish holiday. Muslims,
and then they looked at him and concluded that he couldn't be a Muslim just because he's white.
And they decided, you're not a Muslim. Why are you a Muslim? Why do you want to be a Muslim?
My God. Like,
what do you mean, want to be? I am one. That's what I believe.
Where are the American liberals? Where are the American liberals going? Persecution. Where are they to be found?
They're not to be found. There are some leftist groups that will do that, but in a limited way. But I don't want to get into that because I'll be triggered.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, he ended up getting to see the mosque by joining a tourist group. That was his.
I'll back off too.
His only way in was to join a tourist group, and so he could get in and get some pictures and stuff. I mean, can you imagine traveling all the way to Palestine and then they're like, "Oh no, you're not allowed in. You don't look like what a Muslim looks like in my head."
Yeah, I can't. You're not dark enough for me to shoot you and get away with it. So I'm not going to let you into this mosque.
Yeah, basically they're just harassing them. They've seen anyway. That is the kind of openly racist state you see in Israel today, and we give them money. But of course, the U.S. is also supporting tyrants all over the Middle East, and wonders why they hate us. Is because they're jealous of McDonald's and Walmart, or is it because we're supporting tyrants that brutally oppress them and have been for 50 years. If we're going to be adults about it, like Shura just said to Congress, we'd have to admit that our foreign policy matters. People react to that. But the American exceptionalism is, no, whatever we do is good because we're doing it, and they're just irrational, crazy.
Because we won World War II.
Right. And they're just a bunch of nihilists that hate us for our freedoms.
Yeah.
So we got to admit, like, we're in the Middle East because of Israel. We've been over that. You and I
that's obvious.
Film about that. That's obvious. Anyone doesn't know that. Watch War by Deception. It's free. That goes over at least the Iraqi part. We're making a film about Syria. We should be out rather soon.
Yeah, and it should be about a week.
Should be about a week. See some of the same things. But in between that, you had Libya, and you also had, well, we have Yemen right now, but you also had these brutal sanctions placed on Iran, followed by the Iran deal.
For many decades.
The sanctions on Iraq were the worst of it. Iran deal, basically, it's a nuclear deal. It's something we needed to keep since we're trying to negotiate. I assume we'd want to try to negotiate with North Korea, and they're not going to trust anything the U.S. says when you can just make a deal, break a deal.
Yep.
But Israel always opposed the Iran deal. And at first, the Obama capitulated and put the sanctions on. He supported that when he was a senator, too. He actually authored the bill. But over time, for various reasons, like with Gazprom cutting off gas to Ukraine, with Fukushima hitting Japan and Japan shutting off its nuclear power, which made a greater demand for oil and gas because they import 99% of fossil fuels. And with the sanctions on Iran, that limited a lot of sources of oil and gas for Europe. And so they say, look, let's negotiate with Iran and continue to buy their energy and also do business with them, airlines, etc., you know, if they will ensure that they're not making nuclear weapons. Well, Iran was, you know, definitely wanted that deal because they weren't making nuclear weapons anyway. So they wanted to keep their trade, and they poured concrete into the reactors. They made it 100% sure they're not building a bomb. And the U.S. has been looking for an excuse to get out of it, especially from the Republican side, ever since. And all the blame's coming on Trump. He did decertify the deal. Yeah, if you watch the Republican primaries, they were all trying to get ahead of each other on, oh, I'll do it on the first day. First day, I'm going to get rid of the Iran deal. That Marco Rubio said that. Ted Cruz said that. All the primary candidates were saying that. I don't remember if Rand Paul said it, but the rest of them definitely did. And Trump will, I'll do it the first hour. You know, it's, they're all trying to like outdo the other on how quickly they would change the Iran deal or cancel the Iran deal. So this wasn't just a Donald Trump thing. That was the standard Republican primary runner's viewpoint. And you got people like Tom Cotton that they want to scrap the Iran deal. And they have been following the Israeli line from day one. So this isn't out of the blue or rogue Donald Trump, even though his own circle of people are against him. The Republican Party had been totally supporting this move. And so Trump has done something kind of like the UNESCO thing where he did a toothless action with decertification.
Yeah.
Decertification does not take the U.S. out of the Iran deal, as some people assume. We're still in the Iran deal. Decertifying it is basically like every 3 months or so, you had to certify that, yes, Iran is complying with the conditions of the deal so that it can continue to have the deal and continue to trade. But he didn't certify it. Well, the trade still continues.
Yeah, and but mind it's happening you, most before, of that, it happened during, and it'll continue to happen after. Even if
it happened black markets before, even when they have sanctions.
As if Europe is going to squander a good deal with Iran just because America wrote something on a piece of paper.
Well, a deal that took so many years to make as well.
Yeah.
And they know that they are complying. And so the decertification throws the ball over to Congress. So now Trump can wash his hands and go to Israel and say, well, I decertified the Iran deal, but nothing will actually happen unless Congress decides to impose sanctions. And even if they do, that still will not cancel the deal for all the other countries involved, which is where the business is really taking place. The U.S. doesn't really buy energy from Iran anyway. There is some business deals, and a lot of their assets have already been unfrozen, so that money's already there.
That
and,
was
and people mistook that too. They said we gave X number of million dollars to Iran. I'm like, no, we didn't. That was their own money.
Yeah,
they all that was theirs to begin with. Those were their own assets that we unfroze. We didn't give them anything. We just allowed them to keep what was supposed to be theirs to start with.
Yeah.
But this whole thing is pressure from the Israelis and the Israeli lobby. It's not in U.S. interest to cancel the Iran deal or decertify the Iran deal. It was not in U.S. interest to sanction Iran or European interest. And it was not in U.S. interest to be involved in any of these wars in the Middle East. But they do it because of pressure from the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Israelis have benefited from these wars. And now I'm...
They seem to be the only ones that benefit from the war. What do the Americans get? They get dead soldiers. They get
$6 trillion in debt.
They get dead soldiers. Their reputation in the eyes of the world gets ruined. People sort of see them as, you know, imperialists and all this. The Americans are the ones that cop all the hate for the misery that's caused in the region. While Israel just sits back and sort of doesn't have to spend any money, doesn't have to lose any troops. And
mind
most
you,
of the blame
Americans
is completely
drag
diverted.
Their allies in, kicking and screaming, and yeah, they do get all the hate. And I think the hate should be spread around a little.
Yeah,
it's just like,
I think about 50% should go to Israel instead of the 1% that currently does from people like you and me. At least about 50% should go to 50% because it's like
we ought to see that it's. America's being puppeteered by the Israeli lobby. There are some benefits in the MIC, but you can do that anyway. You don't have to specifically go after Israel's enemies to make profiteering. They're doing that with North Korea. There is some blame to go to Lockheed Martin, etc. But if
you
really look at Lockheed Martin...
The weapons companies have a stake in it, but they're not the ones who thought up these wars 30-40 years ago. They'll sell to anybody at the end of the day.
Yeah, but here's the thing. What is the most expensive weapon in the U.S. arsenal? It's in aerospace. What's the most expensive jet?
F-22.
Or F-35.
Well,
F-22
the same,
second.
Yeah, same fifth-generation aircraft caliber.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, the F-22 is actually more, I think it might be more expensive
it
per
is.
Unit.
It is
as slightly. Far as for development and everything, it's the F-35. You're talking about $1.5 trillion.
Oh, yes, you mean not just to, sorry, I thought you meant purchasing individual units.
The question wrong.
Thought you meant
anyway. Both
no,
of
development-wise,
regardless,
it's the F-35.
They're both made by Lockheed Martin anyway, so guess where the F-35 is built?
Lockheed Martin.
It's jointly built in Israel with the United States.
Mind you, Israel recently carried out a trial of the aircraft. They have about 7 aircraft in service for trials, and even they're beginning to doubt the qualities of the aircraft.
Yeah, I mean, the whole purpose of building, it's a Bradley fighting vehicle with wings.
It's a
but
Bradley,
the point I'm making,
is
if you know about the Bradley.
It is a Bradley fighting vehicle. We are reliving the 1980s in the Pentagon. It is a Bradley fighting vehicle with wings.
Isn't that the best? If you haven't seen Pentagon Wars with Kelsey Grammer, you've got to see that. It's on
that.
ANC Report in the documentary section
free
for now anyway.
Corruption
that,
and bureaucracy.
If you want to get your head around, yeah, because people like, support our boys, support our troops. I'm like, I do, but I don't support. You have to understand that they build war machines just for the sake of it. They'll make things out of aluminum.
Yeah, that ain't
defense. It's nuts. The thing is, the seed money for Weekly Standard, which was the kind of media mouthpiece for PNAC that got us into war in Iraq, came from Lockheed Martin. But then you look at Lockheed Martin's largest projects, and they're jointly done with the Israelis anyway. So there's no difference with the MIC and the neocons because they're so interwoven, you can't separate them.
I got to say, I think I've mentioned this to you before as well in private conversation. You can actually look up a Wikipedia page on Lockheed Martin scandals. It's a Wikipedia specifically for Lockheed Martin corruption.
The thing is, the fines they pay are never as costly as the scams.
Of course not.
So they keep doing
scams. We just need another 5 years to develop it, you know.
It's just like DuPont. DuPont is, you know, polluting the James River in Virginia, for example. That is one example. But the price they pay, even when they're caught, sued, etc., is not as much as what they save from polluting, cutting corners, and all the chemical, you know, all the laws they're breaking. They just pay for it because that doesn't cost as much. So they're actually still making money. And it's just a way for the state to get a little bit of a piece of the pie through the fines. DuPont's making bank, and all it does is ruin the environment and hurt people. But it just continues on. I mean, this is a company who's one of their principal founders decided he was a wrestler, a wrestling coach, and ended up shooting a top wrestler, Mr. Schultz. And it's nuts. But it's again and again, these large companies do illegal things, get caught, pay for it.
And they're state sponsored.
And continue.
It's not even.
Yeah, it's state contracting.
Yeah.
And that's really, I'm glad you brought that up, because you're like, well, aren't you a free market? I'm like,
it's state contracting, man.
It's where nepotism comes in. Yeah, corporations. We need corporations. That's how you and I are talking to each other.
It's the governments which enable the corporations. That's what it is.
It's when state and business are together that you get monopolies and oligopolies. And state contracting, I made a movie about this back in May with the Port Authority, for example. You get these real estate billionaires who are only billionaires because they have the favoritism of the state. They bribe and blackmail the governors of New Jersey and New York because they're in charge of the PA. The PA appoints these real estate moguls to the board, who then award themselves giant contracts at inflated prices. They make all that money, and then they recycle a portion of that money back into the bribery gambit, and the circle continues. And all these guys, almost all of them, the Kushners, the Wells, they call themselves the Holocaust builders. They call themselves the Holocaust. Yeah. Go ahead.
When the system is rigged like that, where it's rigged where you have to be an insider to make the money and you always know what's going on because things are planned, that's actually not capitalism. End of story.
No, it's cronyism. And it's that's the part that we need to cut. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, oh, let's just get rid of the whole market or something. That's the part you want to cut. And it continues because that cycle is like, yeah, they're making all that money, and then they become billionaires, and then they use that money to influence the lawmakers to perpetuate this cycle because they're always pulling in more than what they use to bribe. So if you use a few million dollars to bribe, you get a few billion dollars in profits. That will continue forever. And if you really look at those guys, if you look at the Steve Witkoffs and the Ertheim Wertheimers, et cetera, these are the men that were bribing the cops, bribing people like Bernard Carrick during 9/11, gave him $250,000 when he was visiting Israel a few weeks before the attack happens. And then he gets up there and says, what, Vans? You know, if you really put the focus on these people, and again, there's a movie called Trump's Zionist Ball and Chain on ASC, because I can't just sit here and talk for an hour about all the, I've shown all the documents, etc. You look at this focus and you see where we're bleeding dry. It's not only on the federal level where AIPAC is bribing the Congress to send foreign aid to Israel, which is then used to buy U.S. weapons that are jointly made with the Israelis, and the money keeps pouring in. It's on the state level, too. It's the Port Authority of New Jersey and New York. It's the PA in Chicago. They are just recycling, bribing, and profiting. And that kind of cronyism, again, just like you're saying about Lockheed Martin, they do get caught, and they are thrown in jail sometimes, and they are fined billions even, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars. But they're always making more through theft than they are paying for getting caught. I mean, even Jared Kushner's father went to jail, got out in 2006, bribing, blackmailing, setting up honeypots, paying prostitutes to sleep with people and secretly recording it in hotels. And if you dig deeper in that, you get into some of the sex trafficking and pedophilia and the really dirty part of Washington insiders. And that's how, like, Dennis Hastert and so on. Now and then, it'll come out like that. It ain't just like Harvey Weinstein in Hollywood. It's Washington, D.C., too. But that is a rock that we can talk about later. I want to ask you about this recent move by the Iraqis toward the Kurds, because you know more about this than I do. What's been going on there?
Seen over the last, we're in the second day of the operation now. It's a very big development. I personally didn't think it was going to come so soon. I I knew that the Iraqi government was at some point going to go to war with the Peshmerga, with the Kurdish regime, which occupies the northern sort of quarter of the country. I knew it was, but I didn't think it would be so soon. But basically, the referendum pushed them to... I mean, the Kurds have really... The Iraqi Kurds who support separation have really brought this on themselves. They'll try to blame Shiite militias and you know, they'll make up all sorts of lies as they're doing right now. But at the end of the day, it's their fault.
Well, yesterday they kept saying U.S. air support's on its way.
Oh, yeah. You should have seen on social media. Coalition aircrafts. That you could tell it was... I mean, of course, you check the source, you'll see it's Kurdish, but half the time you could see that the spelling was even wrong. Coalition aircrafts are on their ways to bomb Shiite Iraqi government, things like this, forces. Oh, it's just dreadful, dreadful. But it was all lies. The US is not going to bomb the Iraqi government forces. For one very specific reason, if they do that, Iraq will completely go over to the Iranian sphere of influence, and everything America bled for in Iraq will have been lost. Turkey will go completely to Russia.
It would be hard for the American public to stomach a reinvasion of Iraq, too.
And that's the thing. That's the thing. The only way the Americans...
It's like, why don't you just reinvade Vietnam while you're at it?
That and, you know, popular. We have Zionists who are saying that on social media. They're saying, I think we need to go back into Iraq and dissolve the Iraqi army. It's like, yeah, right. I don't think so.
That is not going to happen again. It's not going to happen. There's so much resistance to it. You say they have WMDs again? Try that. But that's a very important divide, because for the first time on something in a really long time, you're seeing a divide between Israel and the United States.
Oh, yes.
Israel totally supported the Kurdish independence.
Yep.
And the U.S. said no.
They are burning right now. They are absolutely burning at the idea that the Iraqi government will not tolerate a Kurdistan and will use force as soon as it can to physically remove this threat to Iraqi unity. And that's what the Barzani regime is. It's a threat to Iraqi sovereignty, to Iraqi national unity. And it is a tool of the Yanon plan, and this will be discussed in the upcoming video that I am doing for ANC Report. The Iraqi Kurds under Barzani are... basically a tool of the Yanon plan, of the agenda of that Yanon laid out.
Oh, dead Yanon.
Yeah.
Well, let's roll it back a bit for some neophytes. First, explain sort of the Kurdish geographic problem. Where are they in Iraq, Syria, Turkey, and why does this assault basically unify Sunni and Shia against the Kurds through several nations?
Well, if Kurds get official separation in one country, they'll go for it in every other country. Basically, the Kurds are present as a nomadic people, stateless people, as they say. They are present in great numbers. They're all around the world, like everybody else is. We live in a globalized world. But their traditional nomadic homelands are in northern Iraq, northwestern Iran, southeastern Turkey, and sort of northern Syria, mostly northeastern Syria.
Especially now, yeah.
Right, and that's their traditional nomadic home. For the record, they've always lived there with other peoples. They've never been the only peoples there. And
to point out, they do have a homeland. It's Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran.
And it's with other people.
Right, they don't have an ethnic-specific homeland.
That's correct. That's correct.
Sure.
And the people
it's like
that are
there's
actually...
no redheads' homeland. You know, we don't have a home. Like, a lot of them might live in Scotland or something, but you don't need a state based on your ethnic group or your race.
Oh well, if you're Israel, you do, and I guess if
of course,
and I guess if you're pro-Kurdistan, you do as well. But other than that, logically speaking, no, you don't.
Yeah, you don't want to end up like Yugoslavia, broken up into seven different states to fight.
That's right, and that's what the Iraqis.
There's
are
no end to it.
They're fighting a hostile secession that is illegitimate, that is a danger to the unity and safety of other Iraqis who are not Kurdish but live in these territories and who, for the record, have lived there for a lot longer than the Kurds have, all right, as settled people, not as nomads. So,
and there's some division within the Kurds because there are not all
correct.
The Kurds.
There is just let me clarify their name. It's called the Kurdish. It's called the PUK. It's abbreviated PUK. Just wait.
I think it's the Kurdish Union Party or something.
Yeah, like Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. Now, they are against what the Barzani regime has attempted to do. They are pro-unity. They are standing with the Iraqi government. And they are not hot. They are not against the current actions, the military actions that the Iraqi government is currently engaged in dealing with this threat to its sovereignty.
That's a smart move too, because
yes,
you know, they already de facto controlled the oil around Kirkuk and were making bank on
and
it, selling it to the Israelis.
By holding the referendum. Hubris, like you said.
Yeah, it's hubris.
Hubris, pure hubris led to this.
My friend said, his name is Ben Lawless. I'll quote him. He said, they win themselves to death.
Yeah.
You know, there's never enough.
No.
And the hubris before the fall, like, well, you already control the territory. You just want to color it in on a map and write Kurdistan.
And that
on it?
Exact kind of hubris will be the downfall of Israel in due time. Because they have the exact same. They have to have it. Everybody has to see it. Everybody has to see that is Israeli territory. That those Golan, mm-hmm. that Golan region belongs to Israel. That they'll be saying the Sinai is theirs soon enough. So,
well, now there were a faction of analysts, not going to mention any names, but who thought the U.S. of course would side with Israel and back Kurdish independence and would be completely on the Kurdish side.
Nope.
And you and I said, no way.
No way. I could
not. U.S. And you know that I very well cover how much the U.S. kisses Israeli butt and follows the line.
But not this.
That's
not over
too much.
Iraq.
No way.
Iraq. If they want to. Okay. U.S. Let's say the U.S. did back Kurdistan. Okay. Let's say they back Kurdistan. And let's say they create a no-fly zone and they deny the Iraqi government the ability to take back land from the Barzani regime. Let's, hypothetically speaking, well, Iraq is going to become a full vessel of Iran, and Turkey is going to leave NATO and join Russia. And so what's the point of having a Kurdistan then?
And Turkey would shut down Cheyenne's port, so you're not going to be able to send that oil to Israel anyway.
That's right.
Because they have their own Kurdish problem. That's part of the reason why so many Kurds are in northern Iraq and to begin with, is because Turkey's ethnic cleansing of them in the mid-90s, at which point Turkey was receiving the second highest amount of U.S. aid after Israel, even higher than Mubarak's Egypt, just for those few years, as they were ethnically cleansing Kurds and pushing them down into Iraq, because the whole plan was to get as many different ethnic groups in Iraq to foster sectarian violence, which is what Oded Yanan was laying out.
Yeah. Yeah, the Zionist mentality of, other countries can have lots of peoples, but Israel can only be for Jews.
The Jews. For them, they call themselves the Jewish state, and I don't acknowledge that.
I don't acknowledge that at all. And there are plenty of Jews that would disagree with that as well.
There
are plenty of Jews that would disagree with that as well.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And like we said, there are Kurds that disagree with this Kurdish ethnic state, too. And so I want to make that clear, because the news media always refers to them as the Kurds. And you never hear the news media say something like the Jews, right? Because they get pummeled. But they do it all the time for other ethnic groups. So not the Kurds, the black community. And it's just, it's crass, it's unfair, it's a generalization.
If I can give a brief clarification and summary on everything that's actually happened, because what we're talking about right now is, of course, the result of what's happened and why it did happen. But to actually say what happened...
Talk about some of the tactics, too,
it's
interesting,
In the last 36 hours, what we've witnessed is one of the biggest offensives since probably 1991, since the let's be more modest, let's say 2003, since the Americans invaded Iraq. Basically, the Iraqi army has lined up about 100,000 men along a 150-200 kilometer section of front with tanks and artillery and air support, And they've just, and you know, the Peshmerga, which is the Barzani regime's military, Barzani regime forces, as I call them, basically, you know, they were saying, oh, you can't defeat the Kurds. The Kurds are invincible. We beat Saddam. We'll beat anyone. They were doing all this hype talk, you know, oh, we will defend Kirkuk to the last.
Talked a lot of trash after Mosul.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And all the jokes they made about the Iraqi army in Mosul. Well, look who is laughing now. In one day, they lost an entire city. They actually lost one city. They lost about three or four towns, which are the size of cities in places like Syria anyway. I mean, in Iraq, they'll call it a town, but in a country like Syria, it would be considered a city. Anyway, they took these really big towns south, and they've reclaimed, as of today, all the oil fields. Most of the oil fields north of Kirkuk. There are a few beyond a river line that the Iraqi forces need to capture, but reclaim, I should say, not capture. Really, the most of the oil production that was ever in the Barzani regime's hand has already been retaken. The city of Kirkuk has been liberated, and basically, the government is launching a huge offensive. Huge. I mean, we probably haven't seen something like this since 2003. And ironically, it's happening in Iraq again. But it's a textbook sweep operation. And I can see Kurdish forces getting pushed, Barzani regime forces getting pushed all the way towards Erbil, which is further north. And then at that point, they'll probably want to negotiate with the Iraqi government.
They retook the airfield and the military base.
Correct.
The Kirkuk as well.
Military bases, which the Kurds said because they had captured from ISIS, they would never give it back to the Shiite militias of the Iraqi regime. This is what they were saying. Well, we took it from them anyway. We got them back. The cowards, of course, burned their headquarters and burned their posts and everything as they retreated because that's all they know it to do. The Iraqi government's actually expanding its offensive into the north of the country where it's going to re-secure its entire border with Syria. It's going to take, it's taken the city of Sinjar and it's pushing towards the Turkish border. Turkish air power is carrying out airstrikes against PKK positions in northern Iraq. America isn't saying anything about that either. Oh, the Kurds have really been abandoned. Again.
They've been downplaying anything happening. Oh, there's just some limited skirmishes and things like that.
Oh, yeah. During all of this happening, this great offensive, the biggest that has been seen in about 14, 15 years, one of the biggest military operations in terms of the scale of all the Americans have said is we don't take any side, but we support the unity of Iraq, which basically they just flicked the Kurds off by saying that. So,
well, joining the Kurdish side would alienate the U.S. from Turkey.
That's
which
right.
Which they cannot.
And they ain't going to do it. They ain't going to do it for Israel.
How far are they from Erbil, or are they fighting there yet?
Let me have a quick look. I think about 100 kilometers. Let me just clarify. Just going to look it up right now. Okay, just wait. About 100 kilometers, I believe.
For those who don't know, that's north of Kirkuk and
that's
east
north
of Sinjar.
The thing is, the most important assets, the most important in terms of morale, in terms of economic assets, everything has already been reclaimed in 36 hours. The pro-Barzani stooges are in a state of shock. They always had doubts if they'd be able to hold out. Maybe they had doubts if the Americans would support them or not, but they did not think that they would lose the city in 24 hours. In fact, it wasn't even 24 hours, about 16 hours.
Essentially, after that, with that referendum came this, and you can tell me how right or wrong I am about this, but they start a referendum, they get 92% of the vote because they're voting for themselves. The Iraqis don't acknowledge it, and the Americans don't acknowledge it. The Israelis do. But when the Iraqis saw the Americans don't have your back, well, then it's on.
Yeah, pretty much.
They no longer have a giant to hide behind. They no longer, that U.S. air support is not going to come, then the Kurds cannot defend themselves from the Iraqi army.
Now, just to clarify, I mean, if the U.S. was going to do anything, it would have done it by now. It would have done it 100%. It would. Okay, so basically, Erbil from the south, the Iraqi army is about 100 kilometers away from Erbil. To the west of Erbil, the Iraqi army is about 80 kilometers away. And basically, Erbil is going to be pincered from three directions by forces that vastly outnumber any Peshmerga presence in the region. So basically, the entire frontier that the Iraqi government shares with so-called Iraqi Kurdistan, as we know, doesn't exist. The entire frontier is in motion, and the Peshmerga gangs are in full retreat. Of course, this is not propaganda that I'm saying. This is just the reality. The Peshmerga know they can't hold out against a seasoned force which has been fighting ISIS for 3 years straight.
I mean, that's on BBC right now. Let's talk about the fallout. How is that going to affect Israeli energy? How is that going to affect Kurdish forces in Syria?
Yeah, that's a very good question. As we sort of hinted at earlier, about three quarters of Israel's oil came from the Barzani regime. So, and the Barzani regime ain't got no oil anymore. So it's a good question. Maybe you would know, where would Israel look next and what kind of prices would it have to pay?
They're either going to have to continue to buy the oil, but at a much higher price. They're going to have to increase Azerbaijani imports, which won't hold for very long. Or they're going to have to capitulate, look for Saudis, etc. And none of that comes without having to give something up in return.
Oh, so they're really like in the corner. Deals where they have to give something up, do they?
It's impossible for them. They've always had the U.S. club, and that ain't going to work.
Yeah. They don't they like can't deals really get where it from they Syria. Actually have to trade something in return.
The Syrian Kurds, I assume, without that money supply from Iraq, are going to be forced to... Their negotiation power just went way down. All that territory in the north that the Americans have helped them capture, they're going to have to turn it back over. They're going to have to make some kind of deal with the Syrian government, since the Assad government has essentially defeated ISIS, except for a couple pockets. And... of course, a couple of weeks ago, they left a retreat route into al-Nusra, and then the infighting began. So all the rats were at each other's throats.
Yeah, things.
It's good things all around.
Yes. It's interesting to note that the ripple effect, and I believe it stems to Russian involvement. Even though Iraq is not involved, so even though Russia is not involved in Iraq, I believe the ripple effect, the focus point of the ripple effect, the source of the ripple effect, comes from Russia's involvement in Syria. The entire strategic balance in the entire region, not just in Syria, not just in Iraq, the entire strategic balance in the whole region is switching. It's changing. It's reversed. Outright. And to give a live update, as I speak right now, one of my Iraqi sources just contacted me. Not joking.
I've been getting them all day too, like every hour.
Yeah, my Iraqi sources the Iraqi government has officially restored control over all oil fields in Kirkuk. Erbil.
Wow.
The Barzani regime, this is just 12 minutes ago, the Barzani regime has zero oil production under its control. Israel just lost 77% of its cheap oil. Well, of its oil, full stop. It's done.
It's official.
And this is amazing.
And the offensive is continuing at the extreme south and north of the country. The Iraqi forces are not only pushing towards the northwest Syrian border and the southern border of Turkey, they've also reached the Iranian western border. They've just taken a town called Karnakhik, and what's the other name? Jalawala. Basically, they're moving towards the Iranian border in the west. the Turkish border north, and they're sealing up the rest of the Syrian border. And the reason why this is possible, for the record, how the Iraqi army is able to and the PMU, the Popular Mobilization Units, are able to deploy such forces, is because ISIS now only controls, much to Israel's detriment, 4% of Iraq. Basically, the rest of ISIS's presence is in West Anbar, and it's along a bunch of river towns running from Al-Qaim to Rawa, and that's it. That's all that exists of ISIS in Iraq now. It's four, like, it's not even 4% of the country. So, basically, and plus the Iraqi army is so powerful now that it can actually do both fronts. It can actually continue.
You know, back in September last year, that was when the U.S. accidentally bombed an entire Iraqi brigade. When
they
were
they've done that a few times, accidentally.
Accidentally, of course.
Accidentally, yeah. Well, they're not going to do it because the Iraqi army is in a...
is in a position to dictate the course of its own future now. It will treat America as a partner. I don't believe the Iraqi government will be irrational and just say, oh, well, we're going to get rid of the Americans. They won't be that irrational, but it's in a it's in a position to dictate some course of its own future, where the Americans have to start treating them like partners and not like servants.
Yeah, like pre-Israel foreign policy.
Yes, that's correct. Like how the Americans used to make friends back in the 50s. You know, let's help build their economy up. Let's do business with them where they get something back as well.
It was foreign policy prior to November 22nd, 1963.
That's correct.
Something happened then.
Kennedy,
and
rest in peace. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, his brother too.
Yeah, I know.
So it seems like the offensive will be ongoing throughout the day, and so
people
can
like
check
just keep
AAC
going.
Report for updates on that.
Basically, on all the maps, Kurdistan, the so-called state of Kurdistan, is represented in yellow, and the government-controlled territory is represented in red. It's not just the same for Syria, it's the same for Iraq. And basically, I believe the government offensive will continue until all of it is red, which is completely acceptable. They're completely within their rights, not only under international law, but morally to do so. So,
but folks, if you're listening to this podcast somewhere else, because people grab it sometimes, do come to ANC Report and check, because I have some maps there with the cities on it and the colors that Illingworth is referring to, so you can see these maps. If you're not familiar with Iraqi and Syrian geography, I think it'll help you get your head around it. So if you're watching this or listening to this on another site, do check out the ANC site if you want to see the visuals. Sorry for that.
That's all right.
Yeah. I think it's important that people understand this geography. This Kurdish swath kind of comes from eastern Turkey all the way down to western Iran.
That's
and
right.
They
and
like
to design
to think of themselves as ethnic supremacists.
It's literally a strategic buffer to try and isolate Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria from one another. That's basically what it is. And that's what Israel wants. It wants strategic buffers. But
and sectarian violence.
And sectarian violence. Oh, they love that.
Prior to the Iraq War, Sunni and Shiite were intermarried and didn't have this rigid divide. It's when the only reason these ethnic groups matter is when they engage in ethnic nepotism. Then it's sort of... It's kind of like the existence of a military. Well, we have to have one because our neighbors have one. Well, if a Shia are going to engage in nepotism and award government jobs only to their own little clique or the Sunni or whoever, then by default you have to start caring about people's ethnic groups. But if you don't have ethnic nepotism, then it really doesn't matter what someone's religion is or race is.
I believe that just as this war in Syria, when it ends, which it is close to doing so, will bring Syrians together more than ever, I believe the same is going to happen in Iraq. Iraq will be unified by this war. And that includes Kurds that stand for unity. And there are a lot of Iraqi Kurds that stand for unity. It will bring all Iraqis, Sunni, Shiite, Turkmen, Sunni, Shiite, Christian, Turkmen, Arab, Yazidi, everything, Kurd. It'll bring them all together, because this is, in some ways, going to make a odd reference to the Second World War, but in some ways, this is like a great patriotic war for both countries. This is like a great patriotic war. Genuinely, this is about that their country was facing a very real threat. The threat began with Israel, but the proxy were groups like ISIS and the Peshmerga. And this threat was going to balkanize the countries. It's going to erase histories of peoples. Because
ISIS was doing that physically, you know, like in Palmyra, physically destroying statues.
The Barzani regime, and in Syria, the Saleh Muslims regime, the PYD, they do that as well. They erase, or they try to rewrite history. I am not joking. They are trying to restructure history to say, no, we were always here, they were never there, the Armenians were never here, the Turkmen never had a presence here, it was only Kurds. They're literally trying to do this.
The Israelis tried to do that with Jericho based on the Joshua stories of the religious texts. But the reality was that the walls of Jericho were taken down by a very well-known Egyptian campaign. The archaeology confirms it, etc. But they still hold on to their mythical beliefs. And that's something we could podcast about at another time, because we're running up to the hour mark here. But that sort of religious history is justifying, like, God as a real estate claims, as ridiculous as they are. And it's not really history. It's mythology. But people, even some so-called atheists that reject the supernatural portions of their religion, still maintain the history.
Yeah, and I know, that's incredible.
King David's about as real as King Arthur, and they don't realize it. Like, okay, you got rid of Excalibur and the wizards and stuff, but you still think there's a guy. There's no guy. And so they need to purge the rest of that, because I think the term atheist Jew is an oxymoron, but you see a lot of people maintaining the mythological historical claims, which, even if they were true, still doesn't justify taking private property and demolishing houses and ethnic cleansing. But even if, they wouldn't need to realize that, look, those claims are also false. And those claims do foster a lot of the, in their own minds, the justification of, this is our land and we're just returning here, so it's okay if we kill people. No, not even that, because even that part's wrong.
You want another interesting update that just came in?
Oh, yeah, before we go, sure.
Oh, yeah, we'll get this. Basically, as we're rolling back the Kurdish frontier, the Barzani regime is releasing all of the ISIS prisoners that it holds, and trying to, it won't save them, but they're releasing hundreds of ISIS prisoners, and they're throwing them against the Iraqi advance.
Cannon fodder.
So the Israelis use the Kurds as cannon fodder, who use ISIS as cannon fodder. Very interesting, Israel also uses ISIS directly as cannon fodder, but
that shows the desperation too.
Oh wow, yes. All that talk about, oh, we're fighting ISIS and we're against extremism and we're feminists and social justice warriors fighting in a bigoted Middle East, trying to carve out a democracy. Oh, all that talk, and now they're actually letting ISIS out of the prisons. I knew that would happen, by the way. I knew they would do that. They've done it before. They've done it in Syria. They've released.
It's not going to work.
No, it's not.
They're going to lose. Yeah, I'll look forward to talking to you again on the updates. I got a role right now. I got another interview coming up, but gather up the updates, and I'll have you on shortly, because this is an ongoing and rapidly changing event.